Open your Bibles, if you would, with me to the tonight, the 29th Psalm. I'm intentionally taking just a cross-section of a few psalms. You would be here a good number of years preaching through the psalms. But as we've come to this point in our Bible survey of looking at and considering the poetic books, and of course Psalms being the biggest of the poetic books, we wanted to look at a few things. Of course, in the introduction, we looked at some of the technical details around the Psalms. Hebrew poetry put to music. As with any poetry, poetry is usually very creative, very honest. And that's one of the things that you'll grasp quickly when you begin to read the Psalms, how honest they are, how David cries out, and Psalm 12, "Help, Lord!" Just so honest. A lot of the times when you think of the Psalms, you think of David gloomy, down and downtrodden, and just, "Lord, wake up and help us. Arise." I dealt with Psalm 74 tonight at the nursing home. And the psalmist, Asaph, in Psalm 74, and he says, "Pluck your hand from your breast," or something. I forget the language, but the idea was that you've folded your arms, or you've kept your arms tied up and covered up, and you're not stretching out your arm to help me. And a lot of the Psalms take on that flavor of David needing help. And some of there are several psalms that are songs of confession, and David confessing his sin. One of the Psalms, I believe it's 90. Well, Psalm 90 is a prayer of Moses. And then there was another psalm, it's not coming to me which one this is, but it's David, I think it's in the 70s, David praying for Solomon. And so a prayer set to music, life's experiences set to music. And one of the things that we hadn't dealt with yet is just a psalm of praise, just simply praising God. He's not complaining about anything. He's not asking for God's help in anything. He's not running from anybody. It's just simply a song of worship and of praise to God. And it struck me as I'd considered a cross-section of the Psalms and trying to present, like last week, the first psalm, and that blessed individual, and that blessed state of the individual that has received God's grace, and the helpless and hopeless state of the individual that is not, and how that is a theme that is running through many, many of the Psalms. As I considered the Psalms, I realized I hadn't dealt with one that just simply praises God and doesn't ask for anything, and the psalmist isn't in any kind of dilemma. Psalm 29 is just that kind of psalm, and wanted to deal with it briefly tonight. It's only 11 verses. Let's read them together, and we'll consider some of the aspects of Psalm 29. "Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord glory, or the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars, yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. He maketh them also to skip like a calf. Lebanon and Siren, like a young unicorn. The voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness. The Lord shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord maketh his hinds to calve, and discovereth the forests. And in his temple doth every one speak of his glory. The Lord sitteth upon the flood, yea, the Lord sitteth king forever. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. This psalm is just simply praising God and exalting God and lifting up God. He says, give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, in verse 1. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Verse 2, give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Of course, the word give here is not meant to imply that we are giving away something or adding something unto the Lord. The word give here means to ascribe. It's best seen, I believe, in verse 2, give unto the Lord the glory due his name. Ascribe unto him that which is his. Recognize, admit to, surrender to, submit to him as God. Ascribe these things unto the Lord. Give unto the Lord, ye mighty. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord glory, the glory due unto his name. And then in the latter half of verse 2, I believe is the most profound of the statements within this psalm. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. You could take that two ways. There's another psalm that talks about the beauty of his holiness. Now, remember, we've talked about holiness some, and that it has to do with separateness. It has to do with God's separateness. In this case, when you consider it, I rather think that's the direction of the thought of the mind of the psalmist, in this case David. But he said, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness, of his separateness, or maybe rather we would get the idea of his uniqueness. You take something that's unique. The young fellas the other day, they were out, well, not recently, but before the snow, they were out in the driveway kicking stones around looking for Petoskey stones. And they're rare. And they're something that people look for because they're rare. I was listening on the radio the other day, and somebody found they were going through their deceased parents' things up in the attic, and they found a vase that was from the Ming Dynasty. They had no idea that their parents had it. They had no idea how it got up in the attic. They had probably, even the owners of it, didn't realize exactly what they had, but the vase was worth tens of thousands of dollars. It was a rare collectible. It was pretty unique. The more unique something is, the more valuable it typically is. You take a coin that the federal government is making, and sometimes, as with any process, they'll make a mistake. And they'll imprint like heads on both sides, or they'll imprint something wrong on the coin. And typically those coins won't go into circulation, but they become collector's items. And they become very unique and very valuable. Something that is separate from the rest, something that is unique, is typically something that is very, very valuable. The Lord is separate from everything and everyone. He is unique from everything and everyone. Therefore, he is of immense value, if you will, to go along with my illustrations. He is immeasurably different from everyone and everything else. Worship him in the beauty, if you'll pardon me, in the beauty of his uniqueness. That he is God, and that there are none like him. Now you could read it, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness, in the beauty of separateness. And the psalmist may be talking to us in the manner that we worship God, that we should worship him distinctly separate from any other thing. And of course, that's true. That's a Bible doctrine. And you read Malachi 1, or you read Exodus 32, where they made the golden calf, or you read Romans 1, where they changed the image of incorruptible God, like unto corruptible man or beast or four-footed ox or bird. He may be saying that, but it doesn't fit with the rest of the psalm. It's a true statement, and it is certainly applicable, that we are to worship God in the beauty of uniqueness, of separateness, of holiness, that we are to worship him differently and distinctly from absolutely everything else. But in fitting and keeping with the context, keeping with the context of Psalm 29, the rest of the psalm, he's talking about the uniqueness of the Lord. The rest of the psalm, the voice, verse 3, the voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. And he goes down through, we can go down through these verses and see how he is setting aside, setting separate and distinct and unique the voice of God, the power of God, the majesty of God. So I believe what the psalmist had in his mind was not as much worshiping him in the beauty of holiness as it relates to how we worship God, but rather worshiping him in the beauty of his uniqueness, his separateness, his holiness. And that fits then with the rest of the psalm very nicely. So everything that we see in the verses that follow verse 2, you can begin to see how that the psalmist is setting God apart from all others and worship him accordingly. You take an athlete or some person that has excelled greatly in any area. I mean, I don't care if it's an actress or an actor or someone who has excelled in business and has been able to take a company and been able to make that company. Bill Gates, the example that comes to mind. He is, among men, fairly unique. And, quite honestly, he was at the right place at the right time doing the right thing. But it sure worked out well for him, didn't it? And he made a lot of good business decisions and all those kinds of things. And now people elevate him. But they elevate him, and within the realm of the human experience, to some extent, properly. He was an entrepreneur that did some amazing things. And then they look to him and say, what do you think about this? In business, if this was your business, what would you do? I've seen him on talk shows where they'll ask him questions about the economy or this business or that business. And they elevate him by the fact that they look to him for answers. They elevate him by the fact that they look to him for advice. And that's within the realm of human beings. He is somewhat unique in what he's been able to accomplish. And so people, I'm not going to say worship But they certainly elevate him to some level. You take a sports figure that can do amazing things, no question about it, and people will elevate him and almost come to the level, I think, sometimes of worshiping some of the sports figures. Movie stars, same thing. But when we're talking about God, we're talking about one who is altogether different. We're talking about one not even on the same playing field. And the psalmist says, worship him, worship the Lord, Jehovah, in the beauty of holiness, or I believe his uniqueness. So let's look down through these verses from 3 through 11. And let's begin to consider, and as even as we read them, some of the things will come to your mind as well as mine, how that the psalmist is setting apart the Lord and demonstrating in this psalm the Lord's uniqueness. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. Emphasis, in the, there's a colon there, emphasis follows the colon. The gist of what he's saying is in the latter half. And of course, there's another colon after that. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. Now, this is a progressive parallelism. Remember, we talked about Hebrew poetry and how that it's parallelisms, and sometimes they're opposites. Sometimes they're synonymous, sometimes they're emblematic or pictorial, and sometimes they're progressive. Verse 3 seems to me to be progressive. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. Statement of fact. Now, my voice, I'll go out to a body of water, any body of water, and I could talk to it. I'm not going to get very far. I could tell the lake over there, Lake Michigan, I could say, peace, be still. Not going to listen to me. It's not going to obey me. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. A little stronger statement. And this will build as we go through this song. The God of glory thundereth. Now my voice wouldn't thunder in any setting, let alone what would seem to me to be in the psalmist's mind, the whole earth. And then he says, the Lord is upon many waters. So we have here in this verse how that God is unique. How that God and his voice is commanding. His voice is thundering. God's voice is always heard and always obeyed when he calls his people. They hear his voice and they follow him. When he tells the wind and the waves, peace, be still, it always obeys. He's describing in part the beauty of his uniqueness. The voice, verse 4, the voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. Apparently, Lebanon was known and renowned for its massive cedars. And as the psalmist, the same thing we're dealing with in Psalm 74 today at the nursing home, and now here in this text, the psalmist's mind goes to the biggest thing he can think of, the strongest thing he can think of. And he goes to the cedars. But he says, not just any cedars. The cedars of Lebanon. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, even the cedars of Lebanon. Try that someday when you're bored. Try it with a little sapling pine tree. I mean, you young guys, when the snow's off the trees out here, the little cedars and the little bushes that Brother Keith planted out there, walk up to them and see if you can talk to them and split them in half by talking to them, not with any tools. Talk to them. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars, yea, the cedars of Lebanon. Apparently, one of the most powerful, apparently one of the most durable things that the psalmist could think of. And he says, the voice, of, not the hand, the voice of God. Think about that. The voice is all it takes. He is so powerful. All he has to do is speak. Worship the Lord in his uniqueness, I believe is the impact, the emphasis. Worship the Lord in the beauty of his uniqueness, of his separateness. There's none like unto him. He can speak. And his voice thundereth. Everything obeys. He can speak. And he can crack large cedars. Yea, the cedars of Lebanon. He maketh them also to skip like a calf. Lebanon and Siren like a young unicorn. He seems to be, I don't understand all the pictures that David is using, but he seems to be drawing a contrast. He maketh them to skip like a calf. It may be that if he's referring to a calf as a small, infant, young cow, or even ox, it may be that when they're young, especially when they're first newborn, you can scare them. Now, Jacob, you don't have to like look at them cross-eyed or anything. That might scare them too. But I'm talking about the voice. And maybe this, think about a newborn baby little calf. Well, they're not real little, but relative to how big they can get. And you come up to it and you scream at it. You can scare it. Make it skip, it says here. The word skip is to leap with fear. You could do that. It seems to me that David is drawing a contrast here. Verse 5, the voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. He maketh them also to skip like a calf, to leap with fear. Lebanon and Siren like a young unicorn. The voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. Even this dividing, this cutting, has reference seemingly to God's judgment. The word is likened unto a fire that burns away. Or a hammer that breaks away. Or a sword that cuts away. The voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. It would seem to me what he's talking about is the flames of even in judgment. And he divides them. He directs them. Some are summoned to burn this and not this. They're divided. And it's all under the power of this unique, one-of-a-kind God that David's referring to, Jehovah. Verse 8, the voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness. The Lord shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord maketh the hinds to calve, have their young, and discovereth the forests. And in his temple doth everyone speak of his glory. The little phrase there, discovereth the forest, seems to mean to peel back and reveal everything that's within the forest. Discovereth all that's going on. The voice of the Lord maketh the hinds to calve, discovereth the forest. And in his temple doth everyone speak of his glory. The psalmist is describing why we should worship him, worship God, in the beauty of holiness, of his uniqueness, of his separateness. The Lord, verse 10, the Lord sitteth upon the flood. The Lord sitteth king forever. Now we're talking about ruling and reigning. David, obviously a king. David didn't sit as a king forever. Brief period of time. 40 years, if I remember correctly, from our Bible survey. David only sat upon his throne, not all the thrones of the earth, set on his. His dominion was his kingdom. His authority was just within the realm of the children of Israel. The Lord, in contrast, sitteth upon the flood. Would interesting to me, the word flood in this text is in the Hebrew Mabul, M-A-B-B-O-O-L, Mabul. It's the only time this particular Hebrew word is used apart from the global flood of Genesis 6. What that tells me is that what the psalmist has in mind is the entire universe. The entire global flood. I should say the entire global flood. The Lord sitteth upon the flood. The entire aspect of the earth. He sitteth, the Lord sitteth king forever. He is king. King of the universe. He has created everything, and he sustains everything, and he is the only one that can say that. He has no competition. When it comes to creation, as in the creation of Genesis chapter 1, the creation from nothing into something. Let there be, and it was so. He's unique. Worship him in the beauty of holiness, his uniqueness. He's the only one. And in the fact that he has created all from nothing, the Lord setteth king. It's his by ownership. And he is king over all. that he's created. And he setteth king forever. So many contrasts probably going on in the mind of the psalmist. Not just a little kingdom over here. The whole earth. Not just a little space of time. Forever. Worship him in the beauty of holiness. His uniqueness, his separateness. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. Seems to me the contrast is still going on. Only he can give strength to his people. Only he can bless his people with peace. Everything else, every other kind of strength from any other source is temporary at best. Peace from any other source is temporary at best. But when you're talking about the peace that passes all understanding from eternal God, permanent, eternal, again, seemingly to me, just another illustration of the Lord's uniqueness. He's separate. He's above all others. And he stands alone from anyone else, no competition at all. Oh, the psalmist says, Psalm 29, worship him. Worship him in the beauty of holiness. We'll be dismissed.